Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Mike Lowry, illustrator, musician, professional doodler.
There's a sound on a stereo. We write it down, but no one's calling.
Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 290 of the podcast with Mike Lowry, author, illustrator of The Pursuit of the Pesky Pizza Pirate, the newest installment in his Doodle Adventures series. And the music you're listening to is by Minor Miracles, the band Mike fronts. Mike's also the illustrator of the Gingerbread Man Loose books with Linda Murray, as well as a bunch of other great titles, but I first fell for his work when I read Rebecca K. Dotlick's What Can a Crane Pick Up? Rebecca is also responsible for turning me on to Minor Miracles, which is amazing. Okay, truth? I think that basically everything Mike does is awesome. And moments after meeting him on a panel at the Texas Library Association's annual conference last year, I realized that he himself is quite an awesome guy. I've been a fan ever since. If you haven't met Mike before, I can't wait to make the introductions. Here is episode number 290 of the podcast with Mike Lowry. Welcome to the podcast, Mike Lowry.
Is this when I'm supposed to start talking?
Start talking in, let me just do more fanfare. Mike Lowry, I can't believe you're here.
Normally it's two or three people sort of cheering.
I know, I put them to bed. My hired singers.
They went to sleep.
They did, they had to go to bed. Oh no, I'm so sorry.
All right, well.
And hey, I brought Mac Barnett in a gym suit to TLA for you because I knew you needed some sort of, you know, the uniform to celebrate your arrival, so.
I feel like you just did that because you were trying to have someone one-up me, and I didn't love it.
I didn't love it. I'm so glad that we've talked for, like, months about doing a podcast, but that we actually got to meet up face-to-face first. That's been a fun thing. And, as you know, I've been sort of obsessed with your band ever since whomever. Maybe it was, who is it at Workman? Trevor? Somebody mentioned.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Somebody. Maybe not even Trevor. Maybe it was like Rebecca K. Dotlick or somebody. I think it was probably Rebecca said, hey, did you know that he's in a band? And that's
I feel like
fun.
Now is when you should clarify that it's a band. We're called The Killers. We have a couple of pretty big singles out right now. We're from Las Vegas.
We have an upcoming picture book called I'm Mr. Brightside.
Right. Yeah, it's a limited edition photo book / children's book.
Well, I like Minor Miracles. I'm glad that I mean, there's so many things that it's like finding out that other people do these things on the side. It's fun to know that, I mean, people have lives outside of making picture books, but
you used to play
like
music
this,
too, right?
I did. I played in punk bands and hardcore bands and instrumental bands. I've done a lot. Yeah. So to have that connection with you really did come from a place of, oh my word, this guy's like playing music that I play. So it felt a lot like already being into your art and the style that you bring to the table for children's books. It was cool just to have that connection of, oh my word, and he plays the music that I like. So that really was really great. It was a lot like when I first met Stephen Malk, the agent, Stephen Malk.
Yeah, sure.
We ended up talking off recording and finding out that we both just grew up listening to like the same punk bands and sort of in that same scene in our different parts of the country. And it was just neat to be able to have someone to connect with and run off the list of bands. And like you and I were talking about Baltimore venues before we got on recording. And it's nice to have that connection because you enter teaching and suddenly, or you enter even children's literature. And sometimes suddenly you just don't talk about your prior life unless it was some experience that you've poured into a book in some way. But often that's not, hey, I was in a punk band and now I made a picture book.
Yeah. You know, I think that's kind of interesting. I think that's one thing about, so we have a studio here that we share with some friends, and everyone in the group is all illustrators and artists and stuff like that. But everybody that's in the circle of that studio is all, so my friends that are not illustrators I met them through playing music and stuff like that. So that's always the sort of shared connection that we have, that we would have, you know, a lot of the same bands, and we're all roughly the same age, so we all listen to a lot of the same bands in school. So yeah, I feel like it's always weirder if I'm end up talking to someone and we don't have this other extra connection of, I don't know, it doesn't have to be music, of course, but maybe it's, I don't know, just liking some of the same bands or something like that.
I hear that. It's like in the library world, we're all, I say all the time about how we're all like alone in our own libraries. So we all go onto Twitter and make these different connections, and you end up first connecting over like, oh, you're someone who really likes to Skype with classes and do collaborative projects, and so do I. So we start connecting, but then it becomes, oh, you're obsessed with Stranger Things. Good. Then you're going to be the person I connect with every single time we connect our classes, just so we can have that moment of, remember that other thing that we like? It's nice to have that connection.
So, okay, so I have a question for you. I mean,
go shoot.
I'm just going to go ahead and take over the host position of this podcast right now.
I love that we have yet to mention any of your books, but already I'm being interviewed. Goodness.
So this is the segment of the show where we get real. I noticed that, so I don't use Twitter, but I've noticed that ever since, you know, authoring and illustrating a book, instead of just illustrating it, now the librarians that I've met and everything, they're all kind of talking about asking a lot of Twitter questions. So it seems like, so in your opinion, do you think Twitter's kind of a common thing with a lot of librarians?
Yeah, I think that most librarians that are sort of connected librarians, and ideally we're all going out there to make these connections so that we can, you know, a lot of what we do when we're teaching children is teaching them about global citizenship and global learning. We want them to know that the learning that takes place doesn't just take place within our libraries, within our schools, but also they play a role in a larger community. And so that calls us to then go online. But while you can still use sites like Skype for Education and Skype in the classroom and do those sorts of things where you can connect, it's much, much easier to go onto Twitter. And then when you're onto Twitter, you can have these conversations with authors and illustrators and fellow librarians and teachers. And it's just, I don't want to say the immediacy, but more rather the way that it's so much easier to find people. You know, Dear Mr. Henshaw, you looked at writing to a publisher in order to find the contact for the author, in order to write to them about some sort of class project that you're being made to do. But we're in a position now when my students do, one of the examples I bring up with other people is that when my students do our mock Caldecott, my third graders do a mock Caldecott every year, we have the kids read and critically evaluate the artwork for based on the criteria of the Caldecott. And then whatever books they end up choosing as their favorites, the ones that we give our school award to and honors to, we will spend the next week crafting emails to write to the author and illustrator, And then tweeting them all class long too, so that the kids can see that we can leave these messages out there. And then maybe the next class, when I see you next week, maybe they'll be on there and they'll have a response back to us, or maybe they'll have an email back to us. And so I think using that tool to connect, to help build better experiences for the children, but also to help them see that, that they can use these tools like Twitter for ways of leveraging getting information and understanding their world and asking questions and sort of being part of this larger community. Yeah. So I'm a big advocate for Twitter for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. And I'd like to clarify something for the listeners, the listening audience at home right now. The noises that you heard of the ambulance, or the
correct,
that is on Matthew's end. He lives in Northern Maryland, right?
Right.
Is it considered Western Maryland, Eastern Maryland?
It's sort of Central Maryland. We live
Central Maryland,
a block and a half away from the fire station.
All right. So whereas on my end, since I live in a very rural area in Atlanta, you're mostly just hearing crickets and like rabbits putting their baby rabbits to sleep.
I thought I was hearing a rabbit putting a baby rabbit to sleep. I was wondering right. what that is.
Well, there's one that plays a little, it's a tiny ukulele that it plays for its daughter while it puts it to sleep.
Now, is it tuned an octave higher, or do they still manage to tune it to standard ukulele tuning?
Hey, I'm just going to ask you, just don't be ridiculous with me. I would appreciate
this,
it.
This is where I draw the line.
So I'm going to tell you my Twitter experience.
Yeah.
So, or my experience with Twitter or whatever. So I sign up for Twitter, and my idea was, now Matthew, have you seen the Air Bud movies?
They're all on Netflix. I think we were watching one of the soccer ones today.
I mean, okay, I can tell you what the soccer one is called. The soccer one is called, I can't think of it.
Air Bud Soccer, Air Bud something.
I don't think so. I think it's, Let me think about it. But the Air Bud movies have these punny titles, right? Okay, so the first one is just called Air Bud, right? It's not funny. But then the second one is about football, and it's called Air Bud Golden Receiver.
I looked it up. You're right. Golden Receiver. And the third one is Air Bud.
Hold on a second.
No, please do it.
What's the sport?
It's soccer.
Okay, so it strikes back.
It's World Pup, right?
That's so good, World Pup. That's also, like Strikes Back is the volleyball one, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Okay,
I can keep looking it up while you share. Go ahead.
So let me think. There's a baseball one that's Seventh Inning Fetch.
Oh, that's good.
Spikes, I like that
back
one.
Spikes Back volleyball.
That's volleyball. Yeah. Okay.
I'm really glad we're clarifying this.
Well,
I'll make sure to link the Air Bud movies in the show notes.
I assume that you have like a producer that's holding up notes to you. So my idea with Twitter was, instead of using it for anything valuable, you know, to talk about projects or whatever, or get connected with librarians, I thought what I would do is I would come up with new Air Bud movie titles. And
but you had an account, so there was something where you started to do this.
Yeah, I did. I want to say that at some point, a couple of years after that, I thought, I got to go back and delete those Air Bud movie titles. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're still there. But my thought was, you know, that somebody would give me a sport or, you know, a different genre of movie, like film noir or something. And right now that I'm thinking about, the only one that I can think of off the top of my head is a friend of mine, this guy named Brandon. He came up with one where it was like Air Bud 9, and in this Air Bud has to work a day job to support the farm so that they don't lose the farm. And it would be like Air Bud 9 working K9 to 5.
Oh, that's...
Which
that's,
I thought was K9 I thought was pretty good. It would be sort of like an 80s comedy.
And Air Bud could fall in love with Dolly Parton. Right?
Oh, am I right? I like it.
Come on. Yeah. Come on now. Oh, Lord. So,
yeah.
Okay,
so I don't use Twitter. That's what I'm saying.
So I don't use Twitter. I like that you're coming at this the way that you, I don't know how to say it, Mike. I've met you. I've known you from like Instagram and we're having this chat, and your sense of humor to me is what makes your doodle adventure books work so well. And it strikes me that I never put on Instagram. I told you that with the first book that I'd written all through it, that I was going to post my pictures. I never did. I'll have to post some for the second one. I have it in front of me. I'm never going to remember the title. The Pursuit of the Pesky Pizza Pirate.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out in September. Coming out soon.
It's a week away.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So doodle adventures, where does this idea come from? Because the way that I should just let you tell, why don't you take a second just to share with people listening, what are these books when they pick up doodle adventures, what are they getting?
All right. Do you have maybe some soft music that you could play while I'm describing these books?
Or I'm never gonna dance again.
Wait. No. It has to be B versions of stuff. Like, you can't use the actual version or you're going to have to pay for that. So it's like, I'm never going to move myself. Okay, that's all I got.
I'll get my producer on that, yeah.
Okay. Roger's holding up a three. I don't know. He's saying to stretch it out. So the Doodle Adventures books is, I had been working with this publisher, Workman, for a while, and on these activity calendars where the kids can kind of fill out different days and months, and the parents were using it too, and it comes with a bunch of stickers and stuff like that. But we ended up wanting to do with the calendar, we wanted to make it to where it wasn't the sort of generic, typical calendar stuff. Okay, so like, oh, it's January, build a snowman. I'm saying that. I think that was actually one of the activities. But the editor that I was working with said, no, let's just make it sort of seasonal. But I'm kind of going back too far in the story. But I'll just say that. So instead of doing like really typical stuff, you know, really Thanksgiving, just about food or whatever, then it would be, here's a unicorn who's sick to its stomach. What did it eat? You know, like those kind of things that were sort of a little bit funnier, a little more unexpected. So I worked with them on that for maybe a year, 2 years. And then I went in and met with one of the editors and this guy named Daniel, that he and I both really like graphic novels and we both read a lot of comics. And I, as you know, you mentioned Instagram, where I post a lot of my daily drawings. I draw a lot. I mean, I don't really know what other people do with their time. You know what I mean? Does it get to the, you know what I mean? We're like,
I think we're all having a really hard time connecting with you, Mike, because I don't draw all the time.
Well, I don't mean, do you know what I mean in terms of,
I do know what drawing is though. I'm aware.
Okay, that's what I mean. Do you know what I mean? Do you, when I'm speaking to you, do you understand the words?
I understand drawing. Thank you.
Okay. Well, a book is a collection of drawings that's on pages. So what we talked about was, what if there was a way that we could combine graphic novels, kind of getting kids to draw more, getting kids to read a little bit more too, and then maybe a sort of choose your own adventure type of way of reading a book. But we didn't want to create a doodle book that was just one of these kind of newsprint paper. A kid goes through, it tells you exactly what to draw.
Yeah.
And then the only person who would really be excited about that when the kid is done with it would be that kid's parent, right? Does that make sense? Like,
it does. And actually holding doodle adventures in my hands and knowing the way that it does have, you have Carl, you have your chicken character narrator reacting in such a way.
Chicken, Matthew?
Sorry, duck.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I don't even want to. Yeah, I think that might be enough of this interview.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So Carl the duck.
All right.
Carl the duck. Why was I thinking of, what's the other duck from the Marvel movie from ages ago? Howard. Sorry. Maybe that's why I was avoiding
this
duck.
This book is called Howard the Duck.
Maybe that's why I was avoiding duck, because I was like, not Howard the Duck. It can't be Carl the Duck. The way that you have, there's like play going on from from a parent perspective, from a librarian perspective, when I read it, I see a lot of play going on, that it's a situation comes up and you ask a kid to draw something and Carl reacts to it in such a way that's like, hey, that was great, or that was unexpected, or that was actually the wrong solution. Let's go in a completely different direction. And it makes it then feel to me like the completed book is something that you could show to your friends, and it would be something that almost like the reader is co-authoring with you.
Right. Yeah, that was the idea. So the general idea is that a kid would draw in it, but that it would be something that they would want to revisit just to read, and that their parents would want to read. And here's something that's kind of interesting is, over the last couple of years, I've really started interacting more with a lot of librarians, you know, going to TLA. And where did we meet?
Was that at TLA? TLA, yeah.
Okay. And then going to, there was one in, well, I'm getting places mixed up right now, but at Illinois, we went to one and we met a bunch of librarians. But, you know, one of the things that we were really nervous about is that it didn't really necessarily fit in with a lot of other kind of books. And some of the other books that I've worked on are really geared towards being in schools. So there's one about a gingerbread man who goes into the school and he meets all of his teachers and everything. Whereas this one, we were kind of worried that the librarians, it wouldn't be a really good fit in a library because they don't want to get books that, you know, only one kid could do the artwork in it. But one thing that we started seeing was that librarians will get several copies of the book and then they'll have some sort of contest. And then kids can fill out the book, and then they put them in the library, and they put it in as authored by me and that student.
Oh, that's great that they actually catalog it with a kid's name on their record. So, that's cool.
And so they're saying that then what it does is that then other students will go and they'll check out that book, they'll see these drawings, and then they'll want to do their versions of it. So one of the things that my publisher has been talking about, my editor Daniel brought this up, is that, you know, a lot of reluctant readers are really targeted right now, which is a really good thing. I'm not in any way saying that, you know, I'm not targeting reluctant readers. But I think my books over the last, so I have a 9-year-old, her name is Alistair, and over the last few years, my projects have really been, they tend to be kind of geared towards what she likes. And she's not a reluctant reader. She reads all the time. And so, but she's kind of a reluctant drawer right now. And one thing that this editor, Daniel, pointed out is that these books worked really well at kind of targeting these reluctant artists who maybe they read a little bit, because the prompts in the book are pretty straightforward and they're funny, right? You know, so the idea is that, You can kind of get it wrong, but that's kind of the joke of the book. I mean, you mentioned Carl the duck, that his whole job from the moment he meets you, or his whole personality, he's annoyed that you even exist and you're the reader. Whereas, like, you know, a lot of projects normally will treat kids with, you know, white gloves, and they're just really supportive of the kid. Whereas I thought it would be funnier if this duck kind of had my personality, the way that I treat my daughter, where I just kind of like encourage her, but I kind of pick at her, you know.
Yeah.
Playfully, of course. She's, you know, she's not traumatized or something.
You know how I treat my daughter, how she's not wanted.
It's just this funny thing that I do where I get her to sleep outside. And can you hold on just 1 second, Matthew? She's knocking on the window. I'm on a podcast right now. I can't open this window for you, sweetheart. Oh, she is handful, you know.
Always wanting to be fed, those kids. Mm-hmm. Well, yep. So do you mind if I read an excerpt from the newest book to illustrate what you mean about that
character's
voice? Because that voice, the other great thing that I can see that you're working right with your reader at home is that the voice is really clear in this. And I think that for a kid reading it, I mean, matched with your like handwritten text, I think feels a lot like not only that there's like an urgency in what's coming across, but also that it doesn't feel so, I don't know how else to say it other than it doesn't feel so formal. It's not printed in neat. It's okay for you to draw in this book. We want your drawing to be a part of it. Anyway, so Carl starts off the story after we or introduced him again, I reintroduced him in the second book. I've called you here for a super secret mission. It's the most important mission of your life. Only a top agent like you could do it. I need you to go to the grocery store and buy me a frozen pizza and bring it back here because I've called every pizza place in town and they're all out of pizza and I'm starving. And then, I love the, sorry about that little outburst. I'm just so hungry. I can't go to the store by myself because ducks can't drive. Our feet don't touch the pedals. You don't drive either? Well then get out. I only said you were a top agent so you'd go to the store for me. I love that. I love that that keeps up. So there's the word I go back to is that playfulness. It's you're playing with this character. You're drawing ridiculous things. You're not leaving so wide a window that it for the reluctant artist could be intimidating for what to draw. And in some cases, you even give some prompts, I suppose, like
yeah.
In the first book about building the rocket ship. And here's some pieces that you could include, or try to include these components, or draw it however you want. You're leaving enough room for creativity without perhaps feeling overwhelmed by the blank page, because that's intimidating.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. One of the reviews of the... having been an illustrator on other people's projects for a really long time, you know, I've gotten really used to that when reviews of books come out, it's always about the actual story itself, yep. Right? Uh-huh. And then it'll say, you know, oh, this person, beautiful prose, her ability to reach an audience with Mike Lowry's funny drawings, you know, and then it just kind of screws past it. So... Which, you know, it's fine. It's, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just nothing matters.
It does.
But I get enough, you know, positive reinforcement. It's fine from my kid, I guess. But
when she comes inside, you do.
When I let her in. But it's funny. So when the first book came out and reviews kind of started coming in from different sources and stuff. I was getting a lot of really positive feedback on the way that it's drawn and the types of opportunities that it gives kids to draw. But it's funny because it said, with art by Mike Lowry that won't intimidate a young artist.
That's kind of a...
It's sort of backhanded compliment, but I know what they meant by it, but it did seem like it was... sort of like patting my art on the shoulder a little bit.
So for those people that haven't seen your art, your style, I haven't seen, this is the style that I know you for. This is the style. I love that you, the way that you hand draw your lettering. I love that. And I love your character design a lot. And I often equate it to, and this is just my go-to. So pardon me. I don't mean to offend or whatever.
Picasso. I get it all the time.
All the time. Although someone Picasso. Said the other day, Picasso has that great quote of someone asked him to draw a bird or something and he did it in seconds and they said something along the lines of, well, you're Picasso, isn't it? And he said, it took me a lifetime to draw like a child. Something like whatever the phrase is. It took me a lifetime to learn how to draw that simply.
He's one of my most successful students.
Well, high fives on that. Way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't brag about my students enough.
You will. I mean, you should get more comfortable with yourself, Mike. I mean, you need to be proud a little bit. Let the students in from outside. but I like that. I liken some of your art to, or your character design to Mo Willems in the way that I feel like you've tempered down your designs so much that the audience that you're drawing for can create designs that are similar to yours too, similar in shape. They won't be able to pull it off with the nuance and the feeling that you have in yours, but they can get the basic shape. They can see the round edges. They can see, like, to draw the gingerbread man, they can see that way and recreate it that way. And I think that that is something that makes your art really approachable. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. I accept it.
Okay.
I accept what you've said to me.
I buy your books. I like them.
Oh, okay.
I'll start reviewing your books. And I'll just talk about the art and how I really liked it, because that's the adjective that's my go-to.
You should just apparently. You should go over the top and just make it clear that you hated the story.
Oh, I could do that. But
that,
yeah,
that you only liked a couple of the drawings in it.
The words were rubbish, but the way that the pizza is illustrated in this book is quite something.
I would say I appreciate you pointing that out, because I think a lot of people don't realize how much photo reference that I use for the drawings of pizza in the second book.
I assume that's how you knew to have some of the cheese melty on the sides in some pictures.
Well, okay, so in the industry, we call it viscous. We don't say melty.
Good call.
But I only know, I studied for 2 years.
I'm a librarian. I'm not in the industry, so thank you.
Right. Yeah. you're welcome.
Let me jump to your Instagram feed just for a second, because I want to call out that you were on, you probably have been on a number of articles that are posted, but there was Huffington Post or someone posted, a pretty significant source posted about a bunch of like artist Instagram pages to follow. And I remember that you were one of the ones listed, because I was like, hey, I follow Mike's Instagram page. And you've got like a million billion followers or something, but you've got this thing that you do on your Instagram page that I've watched for a while now. And I wonder if it's just that daily practice that you're talking about, or if you're working on another project. So you've been illustrating facts recently, and not recently enough. You've been mm-hmm. illustrating some facts, the tallest sandcastle I remember seeing. And what I see recently, there was about a whale harpoon, the harpoon whale. Is that just as an exercise, a practice, fun for you? Are you doing that for shows with Paper Ghost, or is it, are you working on a project? What is that for you? Because I really like it, and I like that in that way, that's engaging an adult audience. I mean, it's just good. I like it.
Well, thank you. First off, thank you, and thanks for referencing the Huffington Post thing, so I didn't have to.
That's what it was, right? Wasn't it Huffington Post?
I'm gonna find it
and link it.
The one that the Huffington Post one was just about those facts.
Oh, okay.
But there was one that listed, I think it was the one that listed a bunch of folks that other illustrators and stuff. I think that was a BuzzFeed thing.
Okay.
Maybe.
I'll find it and link it, because it was great. And I think I don't often enough on the podcast reference places like the Instagram feed, where you do. I feel like that's your strongest presence there, is on Instagram, because you're not on Twitter. You're not in that place. Daniel Miaris, another illustrator, also does a ton of work on Instagram and has, like, to know. I like knowing more about the artist, knowing just more about your body of work, because when I like a picture book, when I like the art in there, it's great to be able to go places and see more, and to have you be so transparent with your sketchbook, and to have you working out your art online as freely and openly as you are, I just think is a really great place to be able to go.
Well, that was for me the thing that kind of, when I started becoming successful with my art, is when I started kind of no longer separating what would be final art versus things that were coming out of the sketchbook. When I started figuring out a way that my final art really looked a lot like my sketchbooks, that's when my finished work became much more personal. And I do draw a lot. I mentioned it before, I draw a lot. And so me drawing would be on vacations and keeping track of, I draw every day in my sketchbook. So it'll be what I ate for lunch or something funny that happened or, whatever it would be. But sometimes you kind of get into these little windows where you're not really sure what you should be drawing, even though it's a really good practice to have. So what I started doing, I would say maybe a year and a half ago, I do a lot of hand lettering anyway, so I started drawing just facts or little funny news stories that I just thought were interesting.
Yeah.
For no reason, just as a warm-up thing. And then just started showing them on Instagram. And so what started as just so if you wake up early and then you just get into your work, it doesn't, you have to kind of warm up to it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Instead of just sitting down, plugging away at your freelance projects and things like that, which it's kind of my full day is that. So what I started doing at the beginning of the day were these warm-up drawings where I was drawing these facts. Well, it was just for me, but then I started showing friends and then Instagram. And then, so now it's for a book. So a publisher is going to put out a collection of those next year. You had a couple of questions in your question, and
no,
I'm trying to remember.
That's great. Yeah.
To
know that that's going into a book is cool to know that. And that was mostly that I was just asking around that because of all the different stuff that I see on here, to know that it is part of your warm up, but that it's become something that has become more personal. Because I mean, I think that to see you sharing as much as you do on Instagram does feel like we get a better sense of who you are, and then liking your process even more because you're not only showing us, well, you're showing us some selected works, but I mean, you post regularly. It's not like you're posting once a month of just like the top thing in your opinion that you want to share.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, right. And I think part of that is, it's kind of interesting that this is something so directly that was, again, just a personal thing that then I was able to turn it into a project. Whereas when people ask about personal projects, this is the most obvious one. But interestingly, the Doodle Adventures thing was exactly the same thing. Basically, yeah. I went to a publisher and I said, the dream thing that I've always really wanted to do was to do a graphic novel, but geared at this age. And, you know, I think this is interesting. I think at some point I never, when I was in school or whatever, I never thought about writing for this age. I kind of thought of doing more children's books, which, you know, obviously I do children's books too, but it's funny how then once I started writing for this age over the last couple of years, and how, I mean, again, we've met each other and we've gotten to know each other a bit, and you can see that the humor that's in the book that's geared towards kids. It's the same humor that I would just use in regular conversation.
Yeah.
It's just an extension of it's basically like the Doodle Adventure books are just kind of the way. Yeah, right. The way that I like to joke and the way that I like to. So I just put all that stuff into a project and was able to sell it.
See, and that kind of stuff then comes back to me. And I think about how when like librarians are looking at people to bring out for school visits or Skype visits or things like that, how great it is to be able to read a book like this and to know, like I said, I feel like over reading those two books and having met you, but even if not meeting you, having read those two books, I feel like I have a much better sense of who you are and what you bring to the table in terms of engaging kids and helping them to be more confident in their art and in just drawing and maybe not being so precious about it, but knowing that it all works forward toward telling a story.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that's one of the things that I talk a lot about when I go to a lot of schools. So now I'm realizing that I haven't Skyped with your school yet.
We'll have to Skype. We just started school, though. As we're talking now, this is the third day.
Which is so weird. So my sister's kids, brothers and sister's kids, they all live in Maryland, too. And they just started. But my daughter, Alistair, she's been back now. No joke, I think she's like 3 or 4 weeks into it now.
I have friends in Indiana that have been back for nearly a month. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
So
maybe they get out early, though. But
we do, yeah, they do get out early. So, and Georgia kids are just generally, you know.
But so you are getting around, though, a lot and getting to talk to kids and having that time in front of kids.
Right, definitely. And it's funny because with the third book, there was actually a point where I was touring around and getting to talk at some schools and was getting to talk to them about the topic of what the third book would be.
Oh, so this cool. Was, so they got to, in that small way, or maybe not as small way, had a chance to have a conversation with you in a way that could influence or affect the place you go next with your Doodle Adventures.
That's exactly right. Yep. So with the first book, any of the stuff that I put out, if it's something that I've written, you're going to see food jokes. So the first book, I mean, it has a little bit through it, but then the second book, I just said it was like for me, you know, I wanted to make it about pirates, and I wanted to make it about pizza and just make a lot of pizza jokes. And then as I was kind of going around, I got to hear, you know, certain kids really liking certain types of adventure or certain types of, you know, cats or robots or unicorns or whatever it is, and hearing some of the things that they're really excited about. But, kind of talking about like talking at these schools and stuff. So what I generally do is I'll go in and we'll talk about not just writing, but also kind of drawing in this really personal way, since that is, I mean, I really feel like drawing in this way for my sketchbooks has been the thing that has really defined my career.
Yeah.
Because it's all, you know, real personal and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm glad that you are able to be so personal on the page and really show exactly who you are on the page, because I think that that builds trust with kids. And I think that it's something that I constantly am thinking that they read this and then it influences them to create this way. For years now, my students have been reading Captain Underpants and making their own Captain Underpants comics, or reading this picture book and doing that. So to have another place and to have it in this way, this is such a great invitation for them to make comics, because they're making a comic with you. I can't wait. It's such a great idea to do that, call back to the earlier mention of the librarians that are buying multiple copies and then giving the kids the opportunity to be the ones to illustrate the book. I think that's awesome to think about that as I go into my school year now. Because the power of being able to not only contribute to a story alongside the author, but then have it be published, be showcased in such a way that the entire school has access to it, and years after them have access to it, is such, you're doing such a powerful thing there to serve your readers, Mike. And I want to make sure that that's not understated, that's something that really means a lot to me, that I really respect you a lot for, that you've done it with these Doodle Adventures.
Well, thanks. And, you know, I think one thing that was interesting is, so we talked a little before we started, you know, the podcast, and when we've met before, and you know that I taught at the Savannah College of Art and Design for a long time. And one of the things that I saw time and again is that, so a standard college class would be, you know, you teach a skill set, and then at the end of the skill set, they create a piece that shows off that skill set. And then the further they get along in a program, then they're using the skills and they get to decide which skills they use to create finished pieces. So the reason I bring it up is because for about 7 years, I taught a children's book illustration class. And these are, I mean, they're adults, right? Or I guess 20 something up to whatever. And it was really interesting to get to see them work on these pieces in a similar way that they would work on their own personal pieces. But then in the end, they would end up with this book that it was a whole collection of them, right? But formatted in a book. And I would constantly hear stories from students saying, you know, that they printed out a few for Christmas and they were giving them to family in a way that they really wouldn't necessarily do with some of their other art.
Yeah. There's a pride to it and wanting to share it. That's,
right, absolutely. And that is one thing that, so my grandmother was an artist, and that mixed with the fact that my mom was an avid reader. And so when I was really little, I was introduced to Roald Dahl really young, and my mom we read all the time. And so those things kind of together, the art from my grandmother and my mom being a reader, they got me to where I was, you know, not because of some prompt or whatever, but I was just creating my own little books as a kid. So that was always a big, something that I was always really proud of, were these finished little handmade books. And they really liked them, you know, or at least they pretended to, because they were like, well, we're going to get old eventually and we're going to need some cash. So maybe just like be supportive of him now. And then my dad was like, do you think art is the, no, they're supportive. So, But I had that as a kid, and I think that, but I don't know that that's necessarily everybody's way of working, that they're just going to sit down start to finish have a concept. And so I guess I thought that these books were a good way of kind of pushing a kid in that direction. And one more thing about it is crazy how all, I would say 80% of the people that are sending me pictures of their books filled out, which of course I absolutely love, 80% of them is adults.
Yeah.
And some of them, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, how often are we given the chance to do that? Like when I got my copy back, when I got the first copy, I remember looking at it thinking like, this is a chance for me to draw in this book. I don't get that chance a lot. And so to have that alongside, I mean, Mike, I'm going to bring in my copies this school year and I'm going to show them mine. And we're going to compare them. I want to see what you... I'm not going to show you my book until you finish so that I can see what you did. And then we can talk about it, because that's... I mean, I have some kids that I think are just so crazy creative that I know that whatever I came up with for, I don't know, the weird food, the most delicious food ever to feed the slug in the first book is going to be something completely different than what they come up with.
Right, right. And that was a big push of these books to begin with, is that it never says, you know, draw an octopus, right, where then maybe kids draw. It'll be something like, draw something really salty. And your idea of what the salty thing would be really different from mine. We had a guy in our studio the other day. So I've had one of the books out so that our friends that come into the studio that are artists, that they'll do some pages. And one of the guys drew an old sea captain as the draw something salty.
Nice.
Drew him like this, you know, real salty old guy.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It's when I think of draw something salty, you think, you know, a pretzel, you know, or a salt shaker or something like that. But I like that this guy drew a sea captain.
Well, I like that it, for whatever you draw, then it just opens it up to discussion. And you end up being in that good place where it's everybody's right, whatever your perception of the word is or the prompt is or the whatever, everybody's right. It's safe.
And luckily the rest of the art in the book isn't intimidating in any way. That's right. Right. Mike Lowry's comic doodles,
totally approachable.
Yeah.
Even a fourth grader can draw along with him.
Right.
I said it on the panel. I'll say it again. I think you really did something original here, Mike. And I think that it's original and accessible. And it's something that, if I come at it from the adult perspective, I feel like it's such an amazing opportunity for me as an adult to engage with those kids that I work with the child of my own, with any relationship like that. It's such a good thing for kids to kids to talk about. And I just think that it, one of the things I'm always impressed with when books like this come across my table are the feeling that I've never seen something like this before, and how exciting in children's literature that there's so much room still for innovation and for trying things differently. And so I'm glad that you found a way to try things differently for our children, for our readers, and that you're still doing it, and that you've got more things coming out, and that I'm just really glad that this exists, Mike, and that you're the guy behind it, because you're just the right guy for it.
Well, great. Thank you.
I'm going to end with giving you the chance to have the last word and bringing it back to those children. So here we go. Mike, I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
So it's a message from me to these kids.
It's just like the Beatles sing. From me to you.
Was it?
La 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 la.
I'm gonna go off to the side here. And is this your Beatles impression?
No,
you know.
This is the part though where I stop talking, and so I'm gonna try to do that.
Yep, okay.
Here I go.
I'm just gonna talk.
Done.
So my first thought would be that now would be the time to do the hard sell. You know, like, guys, come on, I really needed to buy these books. No, but instead of doing that, what I'm gonna say is, the quick version of the topic that I give, one of the topics that I give when I go to schools, which is to draw something every day. So I am an author and an illustrator, but my career is primarily focused on illustration. And I'm just going to say, if I could go and say something or get you to say something to, just to convince them to draw something every day. It doesn't have to be elaborate or detailed. It doesn't have to be, you know, a masterpiece every single day. As long as you get some sort of sketchbook and you keep making marks in it every day. It can be what you ate for lunch. It can be just writing a funny story. It could be, I don't know, just a drawing of your favorite pet or your least favorite vegetable and that sort of thing. But that's the one thing that I would get any kid. Because for whatever reason, when I was that age, I drew all the time and then I just kept doing it. And for some reason, some kids do it and then they just kind of stop at some point. So that's what I would say to those kids.
You didn't think I'd actually leave you without playing more music from Minor Miracles, did you? All the music provided on this show was used with permission from Mike Lowry of Minor Miracles. The first song is called Lost Ones, and the one you're hearing now is called Go Out. Both songs appear on the EP Volxen, which is linked to the show notes, but you can find it anywhere music is sold. Enjoy. This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Deborah Friedman shares Shy, her newest picture book about a character so shy he does not want to come out of his home in the gutter of the book. Such a quiet and beautiful book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.